From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM later tonight. Those Friday night into Saturday morning open lines, and Jim Harrell joins us with some campfire stories as well. Here's what's happening. Numerous infectious disease experts have criticized a report of a new looming coronavirus variant far worse than Delta or Lambda, calling the report fear-mongering or stoking undue fear among the public by amplifying unlikely worst-case scenarios. That's interesting. In the past couple of weeks, the Delta coronavirus variant, though, has dashed the hopes of many Americans looking forward to celebrating the end of the pandemic. As health experts warned in June, the highly contagious Delta variant has hit especially hard in states with, they say, low rates of vaccination, filling hospitals and morgues yet again in a return to some of the pandemic's darkest days. And unlike with previous variants, new data suggests that some vaccinated people who get infected with Delta, while overwhelmingly protected against severe disease, can still spread the virus to others. Christian Wild, myheartbook.com, is with us. Christian, I wanted you to check in on this Delta variant for us. What have you uncovered for us?
What to believe, George? What to believe?
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, coast-to-coast listeners certainly make up both sectors of vaxxers and non-vaxxers.
True.
So regardless, whichever camp one finds themselves in, we are all fellow Americans facing what may be one of the most life-threatening health crises in 100 years. Several experts, including the Dean of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine, Dr. Peter Hortez, explained it this way. He said, Delta is accelerating wherever vaccination rates are low, especially in the South, from Missouri and Arkansas, Louisiana, east all the way, he said, to northern Florida. But he also added this heartbreaker. He anticipates the reality of 4,000 people a day dying from this virus.
Jeez.
By the mid to end October. Think of that. That would be 1,460,000 in a year. Incidentally, George, there is also another variant called Delta Plus developing. You might have heard about it in Europe. It's not a big fear at this point. But these mutations, they're all typical of viruses as they continue to mutate. Still, how do you explain this, George? There are states like Florida and Texas where the nightlife is exploding in defiance of any masking or any other precautions, and Florida just recorded 22,873 new cases of this Delta virus in a single day and up 50% for the week. And one of the biggest threats from this new variant is its effect on young children, as we are warned and have been warned. The information was that the previous Alpha strain affected the older citizens, but this Delta variant would be 60% more transmittable, which it seems to be, and we would not spare the very young. Just what we needed. Children and teens, cases are up 84% in 1 week. The Delta variant accounts for 83% of all cases, and unvaccinated individuals make up more than 95% of all hospitalizations, so they tell us.
Just when we thought COVID was going away, it all pops back up again. Let me ask you this, too, because you and I have talked a lot about turmeric. Any studies about turmeric and COVID?
Two studies, and a third one being finished. They all agree that turmeric, again, is able to help fight off these two viruses.
It's amazing.
And, it is amazing. It does everything.
Myheartbook.com is Christian's website. Go to it often. Thanks, Christian. Appreciate it. Fasting may be the most effective way to overcome serious bacterial illnesses like salmonella, according to a new study. Scientists from the University of British Columbia say fasting changes the body's gut, making it more able to protect against full-on infections. How about that? Just remember that. Taliban insurgents captured an Afghan provincial capital and killed the government's senior media officer in Kabul amid a deteriorating security situation as U.S. and other foreign troops are withdrawing. To prepare for eventually sending astronauts to Mars, NASA began taking applications today for four people to live for 1 year in what they call the Mars Dune Alpha. That's a 1,700-square-foot Martian habitat created by a 3D printer and inside a building at Johnson Space Center in Houston. The paid volunteers will work on a simulated Martian exploration mission complete with spacewalks, limited communications back home, restricted food and resources and equipment failures for 1 year. Could you handle that? I don't think I would. Not at all. Let's check in with Kevin Randall, though, and see what he's got for us for his weekly report. Hi, Kev.
Hi, George. How's it going?
I'm doing okay. Thanks.
I was thinking of volunteering for that, but then it's not on Mars, so who cares?
That's right. And how are you going to do your weekly reports if you're out there? I'm not going to pay that phone bill.
Well, we'll do it over the Internet.
Okay.
I've done a quick survey of some of the current sightings and found some very interesting ones. On July 29th, just about a week ago, a fellow in Topeka, Kansas, was taking video of his neighborhood using a drone. In the video, you can see bright, small objects flying about treetop level. The witness said there were four of them, but he only caught the last two on his video. Toward the end of the video, one of them begins a climb, and there are what look like puffs of smoke or exhaust left behind the object as it moves out. William Puckett said that he didn't think the objects were birds or insects, and I have to agree with him on that. I'll put a link to the video up on my blog so everybody can take a look at it. On June 3rd of this year, the witness in Babylon, New York, said he was fishing and spotted three separate lights hovering just below the clouds. He said they were in a triangle or straight line formation. I suspect confusion has to do with his point of view on that. He said that he thought they weren't military helicopters and they had no flashing lights. The UFOs remained in the area for about 2 hours. Two of them then took off flying in separate directions at the same altitude and moving very fast. He said there was no change in the light that was being reflected and that there was no sound. Helicopters, of course, make quite a racket. Excuse me. And it's difficult to hover out of ground effect for more than a few minutes. A photo was taken of a UFO on July 24th near Vacaville, California, when the witness and his son spotted the object. The witnesses watched the UFO for about 2 minutes before it disappeared. The father said, and I quote, "The object was black with four lights in a row. It blended into the night sky but could just barely be seen because of the moon shining on it. And that's how my son spotted it. It was huge in comparison with the moon, and that gives it a good size comparison. By the way, my son is a 16-year-old high school sophomore, and I'm a retired U.S. Air Force senior NCO currently working as an FAA inspector," and I end quote. He added that the pictures are poor quality, and I'll have a link to that on my blog as well. I found another interesting video that was taken on July 10th of this year near Grill, Pennsylvania. It was from a home video or security camera, and that camera was facing to the northwest. The video is a little strange, and Puckett noted it might be spider web illuminated by the various lights at night as it moves along. I have no reason to doubt the explanation, but I found the video quite interesting and a little bit spooky. Finally, on June 14th, the witness and sister were outside a coffee shop in Tucson, California, when they noticed something odd. They thought they were looking at drones, but instead saw 11 oval-shaped silver objects flying to the east at a slow speed. The object remained in close formation, but would spread out and then return to the original positions. They had a shiny surface on one side that reflected the sun. The objects were in sight for 2 to 3 minutes, but eventually climbed too high to be seen. As I say, I'll have links to the videos and photographs at my blog at www.kevinrandall.blogspot.com. And that's it for the week, George.
Super, Kev. We'll talk to you next week, my friend. Up next, Katrina Rasbold back with us. Her latest work is called Uncrossing. Now listen to the subtitle. Identify, cleanse, and heal from hexes, curses, and psychic attack. Oh, boy. She's next on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, and welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Looking forward to tonight. This should be a fun, fascinating evening all night long, whether you're driving or at home. Just sit around and get ready for a great Coast to Coast program. Katrina Rasbold back with us. Her latest work, Uncrossing, we'll be talking about that. Author of more than 30 books, including Uncrossing, She's a public speaker, teacher, shop owner, professional bruja. Born in the hills of Kentucky, raised with folk magic, Katrina studied the magical arts all over the world, and she and her husband currently own Crossroads Metaphysical Store in Shingle Springs, California, where they sell their handmade magical products and teach classes on a variety of metaphysical subjects. Welcome back, Katrina. How are you?
Thank you, George. It's great to be here. Doing great. Breathing smoke right now.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. And weathering COVID, has that affected business at all at the store?
You know, we were closed for 3 months in 2020 because of the quarantine. We have really actually seen an upswing. In times of difficulty, people are really looking for ways to help themselves. And so we've been able to help a lot of people through the anxiety and the stress of what's going on.
You were with me back in May of 2019. We were talking about Crossroads of Conjure, but now you've got Uncrossing and talking about healing from hexes, curses, and psychic attacks. It's pretty widespread, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, it's something that I end up doing every day is cleaning this sort of thing out of people. It's everywhere. And it's really increased in the last 2 years. You know, people have just gotten so stressed and anxious that they're throwing this stuff everywhere.
And tell me about the title, Uncrossing, which kind of implies there's a crossing somewhere.
It is. You know, the crossing is a generalized name for a psychic attack. Crossings tend to be a little more minor than hexes or curses. Crossings are something that can happen incidentally. Curses are usually pretty deliberate. And that's what a crossing is. It's just the absorption of negative energy, whether it's intentional or otherwise, into your energetic system.
Who puts the crossing on? Do we do it to ourselves?
All the time. I would, in fact, what's interesting is the original title for this book, the working title, was Uncrossing, The Art of Unscrewing Your Life. And the publisher didn't love that. And the reason is because so many of the people that I work with are doing it to themselves. Now, that's not to say there aren't actual psychic attacks out there. I deal with them every day. But a lot of my clients really are tripping themselves up and believing that it's someone else.
We had a guest on a couple days ago who was talking about hexes and curses, and we needed definitions of them. And I was able to find out that hexes are primarily put on people by witches, and curses are put on by anybody. Now, do you agree with that?
To a certain degree. I honestly do it a little bit differently in my definitions. I feel like the hex is something that's very spontaneous. It's very incidental. It's a matter of a flash of anger or something that just throws a huge amount of negative energy towards somebody, whereas a curse is very deliberate, very specific, and that's when you're stirring the cauldron and poking the doll and being particularly aggressive about it. Curses are often multi-generational.
Now, where does the psychic attack fit in here?
Psychic attack is really any type of crossing that happens. It's just an attack on a person's energetic system.
Done by?
Anybody.
Anybody, okay.
You know where people get crossed most? On the freeway. Road rage.
Road rage. Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. Did you see the Russell Crowe movie Unhinged by any chance?
I did, yes.
That's a typical example, isn't it?
It really is, and it's so common. Something about being in the car causes people who are normally quite docile to be comfortable being very aggressive with their energy. And so someone cuts you off, and you're just screaming and throwing a huge bolt of negativity toward them. You don't know if they've got a wife laboring in the back of the car.
No, you don't.
Doing that. And, you know, people who commute, They eat this stuff up all the time.
And how many times have we heard, Katrina, that during a road rage episode, maybe at night, some rager shoots his gun or her gun through the car and hits a little kid who's in the back seat, like you just mentioned?
Absolutely. It's amazing the rage that can be put into something as simple as driving.
Now, is a psychic attack also done by a psychic vampire, somebody
it
who
can
draws
That's
your energy?
That's a type of psychic energy that is, or psychic attack that's pulling your energy away from you rather than interjecting an energy into you. And that's really what we look at is a psychic attack is going to be the interjection of something that was not previously there or the removal of something that was previously there.
I've always believed that the family curses could be out there, and I cited, and I picked this up when I was younger, the Kennedys. The Kennedy family seems to have had a curse on them, and I don't know if it goes way back or with Joseph Kennedy, but something happened. Is there such a thing as a family curse?
There absolutely is. You look at the Kennedys.
I knew it.
The Carradines, you know, everybody seems to have a strong family curse. And what we look for then is the fact that a family curse is going to follow DNA lines. It's not going to be adopted children. It's going to be a DNA situation. And I see those not as often as the other types of curses, but they do come up.
What makes a curse work?
I would like to say, and I used to believe, that it's the belief that you're cursed. And that does go a long way. But it's really about the introduction of a negative energy into the energetic field of a person or a family. And if you can get that negative energy into their DNA, you can track it for several generations.
Interesting. And you help remove curses. What can an individual do?
There are wonderful ritual cleanses that you can do. One of the most popular ones is using citrus. So you can cut up limes and lemons and put them in a bath, put some rosemary in there for protection, and that'll help drain out some of that negative energy. Ideally, you're going to go to a professional and get it removed. That you don't always have that luxury. And so just a cursory Google search for an uncrossing bath will help.
Now, what about entities? You've talked about that a person can have entities within themselves. Now, what is that? Are those like walk-ins? What are they?
It's similar to walk-ins. Really, there's two different kinds that I see really frequently. One is it's almost like a little, almost non-sentient critter, like a bacteria, that can jump from person to person and absorbs the energy. And once they've chewed you up like a piece of gum and you don't have a lot of tasty vitality anymore, they can jump to another person. So you can literally be walking in a store and start to have a feeling that you're feeling very heavy, you're feeling very uncomfortable, you think you're coming down with something, whereas the person who walked past you suddenly starts to feel better. That's one kind. The other kind is an entity that comes from a lot of negativity building up in your body to the point that those different types of negative energy begin to work together. They become cooperative.
How in the world did you get involved in this, Katrina?
It was bizarre. It really was. I had a little metaphysical store and had done very basic healings with sage. And I was working on a lady, and I was in a swap meet kind of environment with my store. And a guy walked past, and he said, "What are you doing?" And it was a friend of mine. And I told him what I was doing. And he said, "You're doing Olympia." And I said, I've got to be honest, I don't know what Olympia is, and it's actually a form of cleansing. And so he began to teach me, and he said, "You know, you're a wonderful healer. Let me show you how to do this." And then I had two other teachers that came along and showed me how to do this, and they taught me a lot. They were the ones that took me to exorcisms and helped me learn how to do those and how to treat these different types of energy parasitic conditions that people develop.
That is amazing that you're able to do that. And I assume you get better and better and better as you keep doing more and more of this, don't you?
I really hope so. You know, 2 years ago when we talked, I never imagined I would be working in a pandemic situation. And when we have tensions running so high and the political climate that we've had, where people are so unbelievably angry with one another and angry with people that they don't even know, I barely get time off anymore.
Oh, my gosh. Well, give out your website, if you would, Katrina.
CrossroadsOccult.com.
Simple as that. And the book is available right now, isn't it?
It is. It came out early. I was very pleased for that.
What's the candle represent?
That is a black, red, and white.
That's on the cover, by the way.
Right. And that is it's basically the conjure power colors. And the black is for the absorption of negativity. The red is for a rush of power, and the white's for purity.
We'll talk more about hexes and curses when we come back in a moment with Katrina Rasbold. And next hour, we will take your phone calls, two kinds of calls, questions for her or if you've been hexed or cursed, definitely come aboard and talk with us about that. How's that affected and who put it on you? We'll be back. We're going to take calls with Katrina Rasbold next hour. Again, questions for her, or if you think you've been hexed or cursed, definitely share that story with us. That's next hour on Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Katrina Rasbold with us. Her book is called Uncrossing. She's got a lot of books out there, but this is the latest one. If a person has been psychically attacked, Katrina, do they know it, or do they just feel crummy, or what?
Sometimes they know it. If you have someone who's knowledgeable about psychic attacks, or they've been attacked before, and they understand what it feels like and what the symptoms are, they might know. Often a person just doesn't understand why their luck is tanking, why they have no vitality, why they can't sleep at night, why they feel so eternally uncomfortable.
What are some of the best ways to remove the psychic attack?
I always, and this isn't just because I'm in the business, I always recommend a professional cleansing when you can get it. That's going to be a trained person who knows what to look for, knows how to feel through your body the energetic fields and tell where something is lodged in your energetic body. But if you don't do that, always with the ritual cleanses, staying very grounded, touching trees, touching earth, touching rocks, that helps to discharge some of that negative energy as well.
Unless a person has heard you, let's say, on our program, how does somebody who's been psychically attacked, cursed, or hexed even find somebody to help them who's a professional?
It's really, to some degree, cultural. Some cultures are more prolific with having people who take care of this sort of thing. Ours is not very forthcoming with that. And there are a lot of people out there who really are looking to take advantage of people who are in a difficult situation. So it is dicey when you're trying to find somebody. It's usually going to be a word-of-mouth recommendation.
And can a person do this for themselves effectively?
They can. There's a section in my book that talks about that, and it's about taking a shower with some of the ingredients that I mentioned before and just sluicing it over your body, amounts of prayer and meditation, and working very hard to not trip yourself up with negative behaviors.
Chapter 11 in your book talks about egg cleansing. What the heck is that?
That's my real go-to for taking care of this situation. With an egg cleansing, what you're doing is blessing and consecrating an egg. You have the client blow onto the egg so that it conveys part of their energy into the egg, and then you rub it all over their body, and it pulls out the negative energies that are inside of them. Because temporarily, those negative energies are fooled into believing this is the client and that it's fresh meat because it's not depleted from them. And then we trap it in a jar until it dies off.
Now, do you crack the egg on the client, or what do you do? How do you open it?
I crack it into a jar of blessed water and close it very quickly.
Okay. So that's how it's worked.
It is.
Now, why do you use an egg?
Because it actually is considered, although science disagrees with that, it's considered to be a potential living cell. So it's the closest, easily accessed item we have that can duplicate that and take on the energy of the client.
How do you know you're successful in cleansing somebody?
You look at the immediate effects on the client. So I'm going to be watching them for a few minutes after the cleansing to see if they feel better. I'm going to be tracking them after the cleansing to see how they're doing, if they're self-reporting anything that feels different. We just watch for an improvement, and it's really difficult to know how much of that is psychosomatic and how much of that is actual, tangible, scientific results.
During the break, Katrina, a lot of people are asking if you would again explain the difference between a crossing and a psychic attack, a hex, a curse.
Happy to. And this is just the way that I was taught. I do understand that other people have different definitions of this. For my teaching, what I was taught is a psychic attack is a very general term, such as illness or such as injury. It's just a very strong umbrella to cover all of this. The curses tend to be very personal and very intense. When I'm looking at a curse, and what we do with the egg is we can tell by certain ways that the egg arranges itself in the jar, what's going on. Hmm. So I can see if there's a curse, it's going to look a lot more aggressive, a lot more dangerous. Then we get the crossings, which are the smaller incidental injuries, things like jealousy, envy, road rage. Those are going to come up as crossings. Hexes tend to be somewhere in between. They're very personal, they're intentional, but they're not as aggressive as the curses.
Interesting. It's fascinating work that you do. Does it ever backfire on you personally?
Well, it used to. There's times when it did. I teach people to do this. I have healing classes that I teach. And I had an egg that was so interesting recently that I wanted to get a good picture of it for my students. And so I shielded up very well. I opened the jar and took a picture of it with my phone and immediately got hit.
Because you had everything captured in there, right?
I did, and I let ego get me because I really wanted to show it to my students because it was such a fascinating arrangement of the egg, and that was really dumb of me. So even as a professional, having done this for 8-10 years, I still get knocked sometimes. And so you just have to shield guard, be very careful. Most of the time now, I'm able to mitigate that.
Reminds me of a Twilight Zone episode where a guy captured the devil and kept him locked up, and the devil tricked him into opening the door, letting him out.
That's very apt, yes.
Got to watch that stuff. Curses, hexes, psychic attacks, crossings. If you were to face one thing personally, which would you prefer to face?
Oh, just a little crossing. That's my favorite. It's just somebody's angry. You start to feel uncomfortable. You hold a rock. You ground it out. You're okay. That's always the preferred because that's the least aggressive.
Anxiety levels, Katrina, right now, I think, are at an all-time high.
Incredible.
And I have a resident psychiatrist who comes on the show who doesn't think passengers are really unruly on planes. I beg to differ. I think they're out of control in some cases. Now I haven't seen any on the flights I take, and I fly a lot. But you talk to air traffic control people and flight attendants; they'll tell you it's crazy.
That's absolutely true, and there's so much anxiety and anger out there, and that's a lot of what I clean off of people all day long. And there's a lot of fear, and when people are fearful, they're far more susceptible to these types of attacks.
What about people who just merely have rotten luck?
Some people do. And a lot of times, bad luck is actually the outcomes of their bad choices, and they want to not acknowledge that. But, yes, there are people who do genuinely just seem to take the wrong turn every time. I don't think that's always a curse, but sometimes it is.
Now, you're not an exorcist. That generally is relegated to a Catholic priest in most cases, though they have them in other religions as well. But one could say what you do is similar to an exorcism, isn't it?
I've done actual exorcisms.
You have?
Oh, absolutely, yes. That used to be part of what I did when I was younger.
Are you a high priestess? What are you?
Just a professional witch, you know, and sometimes you get into one of these cleansings and realize you're dealing with something more than a curse, that someone has actually sent a demon to this person or has this person possibly has tried to do some work that was over their head, magically speaking, so they're trying to invoke some demons or invoke something very negative to work for them, and it comes back on them, and you've got to take it out.
Interesting. If you're removing an entity... and again, we talked about exorcisms, but what else is it if it's not an exorcism and you're just trying to remove it?
It's really cleansing, just like you would clean dirt from a person or you would remove a tumor from a person. You don't really think of a tumor as being living, and yet it's compromising that person's vitality. So it's more like, if you want to say, psychic surgery or aggressive cleaning.
Interesting take. What about not the bad luck, but the person who is negative all the time? Doesn't this affect them too?
Absolutely, it does. And a person's point of view and worldview will always create the energy that's around them. And, of course, one of the things that we're told is that the energy that's around us is what is going to attract others to us. So we're probably going to attract people who share those negative thoughts. And that just creates this continuing spiral of negative energy around people. And some people really enjoy that drama. Some people love being angry, and I'm just not one of those people.
If a person, Katrina, is just a generally nice person, are they going to be blessed by good things, or, you know, can these things affect them too?
This can absolutely affect them. In fact, it's often the nicer people who get hit the hardest.
Really?
Absolutely, because they don't expect that someone would do that to them.
So they put their guard down.
They do, and they're looking for the good in things, which is a wonderful and admirable way to be, but they're looking for the positive, and they're not looking for the negative, and they just get the carpet pulled out from under them.
That's an interesting take on that. And how do they reconcile it? How do they fight back?
You have to be careful with really, really sweet people because they do get so discouraged when something negative goes on or they see the worst sides of the world, and they can fall into tremendous depression or they can really get despondent about it. And then we have to work with those emotions as well. It's really just individual as to how different people respond to this experience.
Katrina, back to the egg in a jar. Once you kind of like pull the evil into the egg and into the jar, what do you do with it?
Oh, you're going to love this part. We leave it in the jar.
You don't eat it, do you?
Oh, no. No, I that's one of the first things I teach my students is don't eat the egg.
Don't eat the egg.
Don't eat the egg. But what we do is we leave it in the jar. It's very obvious when the contents have died off because the contents move in the jar. They shimmer. They're very iridescent. They move easily.
You can see that?
I'm sorry?
You can see that?
You can absolutely, with your eyes, see that, not wow. Intuitively. You can see that. And so when that has stopped and it's died off, it kind of collapses over the yolk of the egg or floats up to the top, and we know that it's dead. That can take anywhere from 3 to 5 days. And when it's done, what is tradition is that you release it into a moving body of water. And so flushing it down the toilet is releasing it into a moving body of water.
Ah, okay.
But you do urinate onto it first before you flush it, which shows dominance over whatever.
That's gross, Katrina.
It's very gratifying because you're saying, I have more power than you do. It's a primal subjugation.
It's like a dog would mark his
spot. That's right?
Interesting. And it works?
It does. You notice a big difference when you do the pee and when you don't.
What has ever happened that has backfired in all this that you've worked on?
For me?
Not necessarily you, but just that you know of.
Let's see.
Because I don't think it's backfired for you a lot.
I'm pretty careful because one of the ways that I begin to explore the energetic side of things is that I'm pretty empathic. And I needed a way to manage that. And so because I had to learn those skills early on, I learned how to shield myself pretty well. And that served me very well when I got to this part of my training. So it doesn't backfire on me a lot. What I see backfiring is when people have come to me trying to curse somebody themselves. And this stuff splatters. It'll get all over you. And we often have amateurs trying to do this sort of thing and getting into trouble.
Interesting take. The fascinating work that you do. We're going to take calls next hour with Katrina. And again, questions for her about what we're talking about, hexes and curses. Or if you think you've been hexed or cursed, check in with us. Do you physically have to be there or can you do this remotely?
The majority of the cleansings I do are by remote. I get a photograph of the person. And I can connect with them through the photograph if I can see their eyes and work with them that way. And I use a proxy vessel and do the same motions of cleansing and healing energy that I would do if they were in front of me.
Interesting take. Since you've been doing this for how many years now?
About 8 or 9 years professionally.
Well, that's a long time, isn't it?
Feels like it.
Who do you admire the most in this field?
Wow. There are, I I'm trying to. There was a curandero who was a Mexican healer called Nino Fidicio, who has since been canonized as a folk saint, and he actually died from exhaustion from the work that he did. And I've always taken that lesson and tried very hard not to get to that point. But he's someone I've always very much admired.
And would you recommend that people get involved in this field if they want to do this for a living?
It's not monetarily driven.
I was going to say, I bet you you don't get rich doing this, do you?
You don't get rich doing it, and it's not gratifying if it's not something you were called to do. Anybody who tries to do it, who doesn't feel a strong, visceral, spiritual calling to do it, is going to get in trouble doing it. You just don't have that soul desire to do it, and it's so necessary to have that to be a good healer.
Removing entities, is it fun?
No.
It's not?
I wish I could say it was. It's gratifying when you start to see the life coming back into a client who has come in very defeated and exhausted,
yeah,
and weary, and you can just see the light coming back on. You can see the color coming back into their cheeks. That's gratifying, but I don't think I would ever say that it was fun.
There's like a glow about them, isn't there?
It just is, and you can see their aura just cleaning up. And so that feels good. That's a wonderful thing. I don't think I could ever not be a healer. That's just become something so much about what I do. But it's exhausting. Even though you're not channeling your energy, you're channeling divine energy, just running that over 3-4 healings a day is really tiring.
Have you ever had to cleanse a child?
I have. And animals even. I do a lot of animals.
Let's talk about that when we come back in a moment, Katrina. Plus, we're going to take phone calls in your final hour. Just ahead on Coast to Coast AM, we shall be right back.